Well, you have just officially heard proclaimed the most confusing parable in the gospel. If your brain just shut off, don't worry. I've done that probably 10 or 11 times in my life listening to the same parable. Perhaps the most honest article I found on the internet about this parable was entitled, "The Strangest of Them All." Martin Luther once said of preaching passages such as these, "Sometimes you have to squeeze the biblical text until it leaks the gospel." That's the case today. So let's unpack it a little bit. And I'd like to offer you one cogent synopsis of what you just heard. Luke's gospel tells of a dishonest manager who's about to be fired for misappropriating company funds. He considers ways he can pay for his embezzlement, but he's not willing to resort to manual labor. He's too proud to ask for charity. And so he visits all of the merchants who owe his employer money and convinces them to falsify their invoices so that it appears they owe the master less than what they do. The manager does this in order to develop a quid pro quo relationship. If he does the vendors a favor now by making it seem like they owe less than they do, they'll be more likely to do him a favor later, like give him a job once he's fired for corruption from his last job. And if they don't, he can reveal his trade secret. They falsified their invoices. From this distance, this story sounds like it was ripped from the news headlines of the latest political or financial scandal. But then, Jesus, the morally incorruptible, the ethical exemplar, does something that nobody expects. He praises the corrupt manager. So is that it? Is that the point? That Jesus wants us to be deceitful? Are we called to cheat others when our own neck is on the line? Hopefully we can all agree that the answer to that is an emphatic no. Jesus doesn't want us to save ourselves by deceiving and cheating others. So why does Jesus praise the dishonest manager? Well, there are two pieces of this gospel that actually seemed clear-cut to me, relatively easy to understand, so maybe we should start there. One, Jesus said, "Whoever is faithful in very little is also faithful in much, and whoever is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much." And two, it's about as straightforward as it gets. You cannot serve God and wealth. So parables are meant for us to puzzle over. Here we have a man who's not only been dishonest in a little, but actually dishonest in much, and he's doing it by means of his wealth. Of wealth. Not his wealth. Somebody else's wealth. So what exactly is Jesus praising here? I argue that Jesus is using this to set another stunning example in Luke. This is someone who has it all wrong, but got one thing right. He used his brain to solve a problem. And he honored relationships as the priority. Here in this parable is a man who's too beaten down to work his way out of his quandary. Maybe he's just too old, can't do the physical labor anymore. Jesus is praising his ability to make sure he doesn't die, to secure his future by working with others to come up with a solution that will benefit them and him. It's a parable that puts relationships as the top priority. And it's also a parable about money. Now, I'll admit, as Lutheran pastor David Lose puts it, there is a strong cultural taboo regarding talking about money with others. And yet most people I know, including myself, struggle with questions about money. How much is enough? How much should we give away? How can we raise children who are both wise and generous? And so on. Well, I'm not sure this parable gives any clear guidance to any of these questions. It presents characters who also struggle with money. Characters with mixed motives, and yet who change over time in relationship to their circumstances. Characters, perhaps, not unlike ourselves. So that's where the rubber really hits the road for me. How many times have you been in a board meeting or somewhere where there's this big goal, there's this big hope for what might be possible, but no one is thinking about the actual practicalities to get to that big goal? We as Calvary Church could be a church that lives like that. When we're not using our minds and when we're not being aware of the realities of our church, we can so easily, unwittingly serve wealth here instead of serving God. Now, what do I mean by that? Did you know that 72%, almost 3/4 of our operating budget at Calvary Church is paid for by dollars that are not our own? Interest on investments, rental income, and a charitable trust fund, that's what funds the living ministries of this church, 3/4 of it. And that pattern is not sustainable. It was the first thing I saw when looking at this job. Well, I saw all the wonderful things about this place, or else I wouldn't have come here. I guess the second thing I saw was this completely unsustainable service to wealth. And it will without a doubt hold us back from growing and thriving in the future. Our current pattern's one of serving wealth. Now, the opposite of that would make our relationships with one another the top priority. And that would lead to us making giving our time, our talent, our treasure to this church a top priority. It would mean dreaming big about sharing the good news we've experienced in this vibrant, active community, and then having a plan to see how big it could be to serve God. But currently, we are serving wealth to maintain and fund this church. When I shared that statistic, 72% with the stewardship team a few months ago, many of them were unaware, completely unaware, and they were stunned. They said, had I known this, I would have been giving to the church more all along. The manager in the gospel. The manager was concerned with his own well-being and his own future. This echoes what Jesus said back in the 12th chapter of Luke, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And then there's that last critical piece. You cannot serve God and wealth. So what if the point of this parable was being concerned about securing the future of God's work through the church and our relationships with God, our neighbors, and with one another? So did everybody get a card? And do you have something to write with? And if you're listening to this online, grab something to write with. I want you to just take a moment and write down the name of one person or one group of people who are here at church with whom you'd like to improve or deepen your relationship. That's what the dishonest manager was doing. He was saying, how do I go out there and improve my relationships? It might be someone you know who needs your prayer. It might be somebody you just don't know because you haven't made the effort to get to know someone, or a group you've been part of at the church. This 8 o'clock service, an outreach ministry. Who's the person or group that you'd like to commit to and then write October 18th, 2019. That's a month from now. Let's take seriously that God gives us one another, this neighborhood to love, and that we are given all of our resources. Everything that we have is a gift from God. And if we even just gave a portion of that to care for others, none of us know how much time we may have to keep doing that. And the church and its people deserve our investment of our time and our energy and our money. So look at that name or write down that name of a person or group, and you can put it in your envelope. Did you get an envelope? And then open it again on October 18th, 2019 and see how you've done. Now, this is not a challenge. No one's going to judge the outcome. It's just an invitation to see those around us, this church, as God's true gifts to us. This is the honest wealth and true riches of life and community. I believe that the living dollars we need to be faithful at Calvary follow the strength of our relationships with one another. And in 5 years, if we are diligent, if we are faithful, if we are wise, if we are, we will then be reaching out in our community and serving others. We could be experiencing God's presence and healing and grace in ways that we can only imagine today. And that's what it looks like to serve God. No longer serving our wealth. And then we're no longer a slave to our wealth. But we're serving God with all of our substance, with all that we have. And when we're faithful in the little things, that translates to being faithful in the big things. So may we serve God. May we be shrewd in our use of our relationships and with all that we have for God's purposes. And hold on tight, because when we do this, the blessings are great. Amen.